You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans? And welcome back to another edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. I am your host, Ross Uglum, the publisher of that very fine website. And joining me today will be people that join me later. We are going to have Bison Report photographer, Green Bay Packers podcaster, talk a little Christian Watson, and some Bison football, North Dakota native and all-around great guy Jake Stack, as well as NDSU men's basketball analyst Nate Zastro, to talk the big win over Montana last night in their house. That was most excellent to watch. We got a fine show for you today, even though we're running a little bit shorthanded. No Zach, no Trev. We will try and get them back on if there's a big win over UNI on Saturday. Into the news, former North Dakota State defensive coordinator and, once again, all-around great guy, David Braun, is the permanent, although nothing's ever permanent, but he is no longer the interim head coach at Northwestern. Bronny, now the head football coach at Northwestern University of the Big Ten. If you don't know the story, there was an incident or a hazing or some sort of situation scandal that I'm not going to get into on this podcast, in which the head man there, Pat Fitzgerald, was let go, and Bronny was moved into a interim head coach position. I believe Northwestern went 2-9 a year ago, and I hear Dave sits at 5-5, which I know does not maybe sound impressive to Bison fans, but I promise you at Northwestern, it is. I mean, that is a high, high-level academic institution. It is hard to always get kids admitted there. That is impressive. I promise you what he's doing right now is very, very impressive. I won't get into a ton more, I guess, from a news standpoint. I want to break down, I guess, what has happened since we last spoke. North Dakota State with kind of a disappointing performance, I would say, in there. And look, it was a really weird environment, right? You go back and talk and think and sort of commiserate over that loss to UC Davis by 15 points in Missoula, and it was at 3:00 in the afternoon and in Montana's gym with no fans, and it sounds like I'm making excuses, but that was just, to use a phrase that my daughter would use, icky. It was an icky game. It was all icky. That, of course, coming after the loss to Creighton, the Bison really, were strong for the first 15, 16 minutes of that game. Creighton closes the first half on a hell of a run and then just doesn't miss for basically the entire second half. They are maybe the best offensive team in the country with a specific defensive anchor in Ryan Kalkbrenner. They're the number 8 team in the country right now. I would not be surprised to see Creighton in the Final Four. And that's not me making excuses for NDSU. It's not me, it is I, also publisher of Jays 24/7. They're good, man. Like, Baylor, Shireman, and Trey Alexander operate at such an incredibly high level. Mason Miller does what he needs to do for that team. And then Kalkbrenner, I mean, you saw it when he showed that he wasn't going to respect what Morgan and Strike could do from the top of the key shooting the ball. he clogged up everything. I mean, there's just nowhere for anyone to go with Kalkbrenner sagging off a guy. So if you don't have a five-man that can shoot, brother, I don't know how you're going to score against Creighton. And then they are going to score. I mean, that is what they do. You just saw Creighton beat Iowa the other night. They're a good, good, good basketball team. But I think the more disappointing performance was UC Davis, because NDSU is probably a more talented team than UC Davis. And I think they showed that last night. And to discuss that, just awesome win. I'm going to call it the best win in the Summit League so far. To beat the number two team in the Big Sky on their house and I get it. It finished as a 9-point game, but the Bison were up like 17 with 8 minutes to go, and I think there was some flopping stuff that happened. I think there were some, you start a comeback and the refs like to swallow their whistles, or the home team, when they're coming back, there's a certain kind of officiating, and then you're told as a defense not to foul because it extends the it stops the clock and extends possessions, and then you're giving up layups. And I don't put a ton of stock into, what the Grizzlies did at the end of the game. During the kind of competitive portion of that game, NDSU really kicked their butt. And we're going to talk to Nate Zastro about that right now. Okay, bringing on, once again, from the road, Bison Report men's basketball analyst, Nate. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. A little tired, but it was nice to see the Bison get a nice road win against a team that's picked to win the Big Sky, and a quality opponent who I believe beat us last year
in Fargo.
Seeing the rotation and the offensive efficiency from last night was good to see, and hopefully they can carry that forward.
Yeah, I think, speaking of offensive efficiency, just not the type of performance you were looking for from NDSU in the loss to UC Davis on Tuesday. Not that that's a bad team, but it's like, I think they said 6 international kids and 8 transfers. It shouldn't be necessarily a team that looks better than you early in the season. I mean, in theory, UC Davis is kind of thrown together, and NDSU has this culture of guys that, went to war together last year, and Tuesday was disappointing, but, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, frankly, Nate, you and I discussed, like, this is the Summit League's best win so far in this season. No high major wins for the league, but this is the Summit League's best win. The Grizz were picked number 2 in their conference, and I mean, I know that the final tally was only 9, and things got kind of hairy, but for 36 minutes, NDSU blew the doors off of Montana in their gym.
Yeah, and it's all started from the beginning of the game. Like, I think early lead, and they held that lead between 5 and double digits pretty much for majority of the game. And I just said to you before we got on here, is it didn't look like Montana was ever going to be able to get enough stops. NDSU was rolling that much offensively with multiple different players, whether it was with Bowden or Jakari getting to the basket or hitting a shot, or Damari getting to the basket. And they just have so many different options when they have the rotation the way it was, and which I believe we're going to be talking about, is they finally put their 5 best players out to start the game, and you kind of just went from there and see what you could get off the bench. And I hope that that's the trend going forward.
Yeah, we'll talk about that now. NDSU really heavy with that rotation, and I mean that in the sense that, like, the top guys were playing. You had Waddles and Feddersen in the lineup to start the season, and Lance hasn't had the shooting start that he probably wanted. And, Streit's been very involved, and Streit actually ends up involved kind of towards the end, but at the beginning, he was out of the rotation. Morgan and Wheeler Thomas and Bo were actually joined by Jakari and Tejavis Miller in the starting lineup, which was new. But Feddersen did not play the 4. Feddersen came in to relieve Morgan. And Morgan, the only starter that didn't play at least 33 minutes. And so that was interesting to me, where Deset was kind of the top wing, Burke was kind of the top 4, and then, Feddersen basically was your backup big, and then Damari just didn't come out. And so that was really something, to play 40 minutes and turn the ball over once from the point guard position with 22 points, 3 rebounds and 2 assists. Damari was awesome, but you mentioned it, putting their best 5 in. Is it a traditional lineup? No. You know, it forces Skunberg to play a little bit of that A.J. Jacobson four, that Sam Griesel four, if you will. And, you know, with however long NDSU's kind of had Grant involved and playing that 6'11", 7-footer type body at the power forward position, now it's basically four guards around Morgs. And that was really tough. And I tell you what, and he made one of two. If Morgan can really get that top of the key three-pointer to go at a decent clip, like, NDSU is really not going to be guardable offensively.
Yeah, and the way they run dribble handoffs, and they set a bunch of ball screens at the top of the key where Damari's really good and Bowden's really good and Jakari even is really good at getting their feet in the lane and jump stopping, where Morgan's going to have looks because the big guy that's guarding Morgan's going to have to help on those drives off the ball screen. So if Morgan can hit that consistently at even like 35, 40%, that's going to make NDSU really tough to guard. And I know it's not the traditional lineup, but if they can get away defensively with having a lineup with four guards like they had last night, and obviously it worked against a team like Montana, it may not work against every opponent. But offensively, they're going to be a handful to guard with four guards who all have the ability to get in the lane, all have the ability to shoot it from the perimeter. And then you add Morgan in there, who you could plop on the low block. And if he wants to go out and hit a decent amount of threes at a 35, 40% percentage, that's going to make them very tough to guard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think of that because of kind of how things went against Creighton, where Kalkbrenner just said, shoot it. Whether it was Strider or Morgan, it didn't matter. I mean, they just dared him to shoot the wide open top of the key three. And you're right. I mean, if you can hit that shot uncontested, we're not talking about being a 40% 3-point shooter. We're talking about an uncontested three from the top of the key. Can you hit that at a 40% clip? That shot, I think it makes them really, really difficult to guard defensively. I was so impressed, though. On and Moody, who I think is 26 or 27 years old. I'm only slightly joking. Anand Moody leads Montana with 18 points, but it came on 16 shots, and he didn't make a three. North Dakota State was so switchable with that lineup and just did it so fluidly. I was so impressed, and I'm going to post a couple of clips when I get a chance here from the Bison Report account. Like, they just, man, the screens that Montana wanted to set to get guys open, NDSU just didn't care. Fine, we'll switch. We don't, like, doesn't matter. Jakari, and I think one of the biggest aspects of that is, despite Damari being 5'11 or 6 feet, like, he was able to stay in Moody, and for them not to, you know, get switches onto Damari and take a ton of advantage of that, I think it makes NDSU kind of the highest level of what they can be, and was really, like I said, for 35 minutes of that game, just beating down this top level Big Sky team.
Yeah, and that's the other thing defensively is if the other team's going to come at you with four guards of themselves, which it seemed like Montana did, besides their big guy, which I think his last name's Oak or something,
yeah.
Who's a very skilled player. But if they're able to switch one through four and basically Morgan can contain hedge on any type of ball screen or screening action, I mean, that's our best lineup. We almost welcome a team to come at us with four guards. And the bench, like, Damari's not going to play 40 minutes a game. I know Dave's going to ride him,
yeah,
as much as he can. I think yesterday was more of a, hey, we're not desperate, but we want to win this game. We played like absolute crap on Tuesday. We're going to do whatever we can to get a huge win and get our swagger back, get our confidence back. And if that means that Damari's got to play 40 minutes and three other guys got to play 30 plus minutes, then that's what we're going to do. And we're going to put our best lineup out there. Basically, somewhat all in to try to get this win. And I feel like that's what Dave wanted going forward,
and
that their schedule's not that many favors.
And they don't have a Division I game until Thanksgiving Saturday. You know, they're 8 days away from it now. They were 9 days away from their next Division I game. So I just don't think it was a big deal. I think you're right. I mean, I think Damari probably needs to play 35 or 36 minutes a game. Like, they do have to find that 4-minute stretch or two-minute stretches where Javis brings the ball up or Jakari brings the ball up or whatever. I don't know that on those sophomore, those legs of DWT, if you know, it's really going to make a ton of sense to go that hard. But I get it, man. When you have 9 days until your next Division One game with Wisconsin Stout coming, you know, for kind of another non D1 sort of tune up deal. I think you can get away with sort of what they got away with. The Strite stuff was interesting. You know, we love Josh. He's a, certainly kind of a not kind of I mean he is a try hard player. But the offensive skill has never been there, and you wonder, you know, kind of what they would want to do with Fetterson. And, you know, Strite did Strite stuff, man. 5 boards, 2 assists. I mean, he did Josh Strite stuff. But it was interesting to me that kind of the initial plan at least seemed to be, well, we'll just go with Morgan and Fetterson at the 5, and then the other, you know, however many spots in the rotation will go to Burke and Dissette and Waddles. And Waddles was almost non-existent. I mean, he played 2 minutes. So that's a, you know, kind of a far cry from his position in the starting lineup earlier in the season.
Yeah, and I think Josh's role, he knows his role and he plays it well. And if you can find, I think Dinsmore looking for a guy like Fetterson who can do Josh Strite's stuff and give him more of an offensive production, I guess is probably the words, is if you can get someone who can come in and know their role and rebound and block shots and make the right pass and not turn the ball over, and give a little bit more offensive production, then that's why I think Dave's going to see what he has in Fetterson. And if that ends up not working out, he's still got Josh, who's most likely going to be the type of player who's going to be ready and be able to give him what he's given him for the last 2 years.
Yeah, and part one of the things too to pay attention to with Morgs with just 22 minutes, 4 fouls. I mean, that's kind of easy to you know do the math there on how he may or may not have been able to, you know, participate deep into that game. One player before we go that I definitely want to make note of though, outside of Wheeler Thomas and obviously Skunberg just doing Bowden stuff with 16, 6, and 4 is Tejavis Miller, man. He wanted that Sports Center dunk, and I wanted that for him. But just he was everywhere, man, with his 2 steals and a block and grabbing 7 boards and banging home 4 threes. He is so damn talented.
Yeah, and he's starting to find a way defensively to use his length a little bit from the wing spot and getting in some passing lanes. And I mean, he hit some tough shots last night. I mean, but he was shooting with confidence. He was just catching, getting his feet set, and I mean, he was on the move for some of those threes where he just caught a few on the move and just squared his feet up and knocked them down, and they were nothing but net. So I mean, he's going to give us that. He's going to be an offensive spark. I think he's still going to develop his game to where he can get to a little bit of a mid range and use his size and strength a little bit like Bowden does, but that's I right now if he can continue to use his length, getting passing lanes and knock down open shots and rebound like that from the guard spot is huge for him going forward.
I totally agree, and again, as we said, probably the most impressive win in the Summit League to date. No high major wins for the league, and for NDSU to go out to Missoula and really beat on the Grizz for 35 of those minutes of the game. And again, they won by 9 as 9-point underdogs. This was a very, very good win. NDSU back in town on Monday, hosting, believe, Wisconsin Stout in a non-D1 before they head down to Phoenix to play Grand Canyon. Nate, thanks for your time, buddy.
Thank you. Go Bison.
All right, want to thank Nate for his time. And really got, I mean, that was fun. I'm still kind of pouring over some clips and stuff from that game. They were so versatile defensively and so lethal on offense. I just, boy, that the lineup where they kind of tighten things up and no disrespect to Josh Strite, but where, you know, it's Fetterson that comes in at the 5, and I know he only had the dunk, but just, he's so much more dynamic on offense. And I don't know that you lose anything defensively. You start to like all 8-9 guys are a threat offensively, and that's rare and super fun. And very pumped to see them at Grand Canyon and at San Jose State the weekend of Thanksgiving. I think those are going to be two very, very difficult places to play. But, boy, if they're able to sneak a win at Grand Canyon or at San Jose State, you're going to – the excitement level here is – is going to be high, because those are two really solid programs right now, two true road games. And for NDSU at this point in the season to have true road wins at Western Michigan and at Montana, that's high-level mid-major basketball, man, and I think is really, really impressive. Okay, this episode of Bison Report Radio brought to you by the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. Stop up to Gateway Chevrolet and see the phenomenal inventory of both new and used trucks. It is getting to be that time. I actually saw a Facebook deal of last year on November 17th, and I think there was snow all over the ground. I think we're you know, hopefully in store for a more mild winter, but at the same time, four-wheel drive season is coming, and go see what Gateway Chevrolet has in that four-wheel drive family. You're going to get phenomenal sales experience, and after that, they've got just an excellent, excellent service department. So go see my boys up on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo. Getting in very briefly, because it is a Friday show, so we're not going to spend a ton of time, but I just was really impressed with everything NDSU was able to do against Southern Illinois. I think they were about a touchdown favorite or something like that. And, you know, halftime, I think things were a little bit dicey. But after that, it was just a butt kicking. I mean, 34-10 is a butt kicking kind of any way you slice it. This was an SIU team that was really, really defending the run well, and NDSU ran it for almost 4.8 a carry. In fact, you take out their two kneels and probably are right at 5 a carry. I just was super impressed the way that they're utilizing Rajon Nelson in that role is just more awesome stuff from Coach Roll and that offensive staff. Cam 15 for 19 for 232. I mean, come on, man. Like they are just operating at such a high level offensively. Barica with 15 carries, not for a great average, but really kind of taking that number one role. And hey, 45 runs with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different guys taking those carries. That's how you keep guys fresh. That's how you know, have the opportunity for some impact in the playoffs. And what a catch by Braylon Henderson, man. That 52-yarder. He's been really good. And I think, you know, we sort of opined there was some potential injury stuff there for Braylon. And I'm starting to buy that, because this Braylon is so much different than what we've seen in the more recent part of the season. What early Braylon was just not this impactful. He's been awesome, man. And I'm really, really impressed with the kid and everything he's been able to bring defensively, man. To hold SIU to 2.1 per carry and then just really shut down Nick Baker. I mean, 114 passing yards when you're only getting 2.1 a carry. That's how you only give up 10 points. And they were dominant defensively. And I really liked seeing some of the young guys get into this game. Najee Nelson had a ball game, man. I know it was only 14, 15, 16 snaps, something like that, but boy, was he impressive. Another nice game for Dylan Hendricks, productive game from Jake Cava, and they were excellent. They were very, very, very good defensively in a season where that has not always been the case, and we'll see how long it lasts, or we'll see, you know, if the defense can string together four or five more games like they did against SIU, because if they can, this team is still capable of just about anything. All right. As we mentioned, my good buddy Jake Stack to talk a little bit of Christian Watson and also preview this weekend's matchup with you and I. All right. Bringing on now Bison Report photographer, lifelong NDSU fan, and my close and personal friend. You've heard him referenced on the Benchwarmers before as the goodest of good guys. Mr. Jake Stack, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. It is Friday before Thanksgiving break. I got the whole week coming off up here where I don't have to go to work, and looking forward to some Bison football, but also some time with family and friends coming up.
So I want to start kind of on a tough subject, if you will. Because of your status as a Packers podcaster and somebody who does a podcast occasionally with Christian Watson's brother, Trey, I just kind of wanted to get, like, people know what my take is, or they've heard me talk enough. I want to get kind of your take on what's going on in Green Bay, why Christian has not been able to sort of replicate, you know, what what happened his rookie season, maybe some of the frustrations fans are having with him, or just sort of your, you know, kind of level-headed take, because Willis and I give you crap all the time. You're a Jordan Love narrative pusher. That's what you like to do. But at the same time, you know, we mentioned your relationship with Trey, and you obviously are rooting for Christian to do well. So you're kind of one of the only guys I know that, you know, has sort of a foot in both camps. What's going on with Christian Watson?
I mean, two stats I think you can really point to with Christian, and these aren't excuses for him. I think Christian would be the first one to tell you that he's not having the year that he wanted or expected. But of receivers in the National Football League with at least 30 targets, Christian's average depth of target is above 17. I think it's like 17.3, which is highest in the league. And so essentially you're talking about a three-point shooter right now, and percentages are going to be lower when that is, when that's the deal. And the other thing that you have to factor in is the guy that's throwing the ball has not been accurate with his, I mean, Jordan Love, and you're right. I'm a fan of Jordan Love. I'm a fan of his talent, but the fact of the matter is he has not been a good quarterback this year in the National Football League. And, he is one of the lowest. I mean, his completion percentage on passes above 20 yards is the lowest in the NFL of qualifying.
Which is where they're targeting Watson.
Yes. So yeah, you factor those two things in. And, I mean, Jordan said it himself. Jordan Love said it himself this last week. It's not all Christian. He's not giving him a chance at times. And if you watch the games, you see that. Now, can Christian do a better job on some of them? Like, of course. And like I said, I think he would even admit to that. But sure, when you can't get into a rhythm as a receiver in the NFL, I think that can throw your game off, especially a young guy like Christian. But what we've seen in this league, is, especially for Packers receivers, is quite honestly, he's kind of on the trajectory that all their great receivers went on. They typically don't get big time production out of first and second year players at the wide receiver position. Everyone likes to reference, you know, Devontae Adams in his second year with the Packers, which was marred by injuries, which was marred by him being kind of thrust into a wide receiver one position that he just wasn't ready for. And then year three, you really started to see him kind of rise to prominence. And I think with Christian, he's not Devontae, you know, even his play style, he's just not who he is. But in his third year of this league, I think we're going to really see, is this kid going to be, is it's going to be a make or break year. But with Christian, you have a guy that cares a lot about being good, that puts in the work to be good, and he's as athletically gifted as anyone in the league. So with players like that, they typically figure it out. They just do. And that's kind of just what my expectations for Christian are going to be moving forward. And he's still got plenty of season left this year to figure it out. I think some of it is he's just got to get healthy. He's got to get healthy. He's got to get more reps with his young quarterback. And I think that's just kind of is what it is and is what it's going to be. But I'm still firmly in the camp of Christian Watson can absolutely be a wide receiver one for the Packers.
All right. That's enough Packers talk. We're going to lose part of the audience here. But you have a unique perspective. And I think that was, you know, important for us to kind of touch on. Have you shot a Bison game for me this year, or was it just
was not it yet? No. I was in Missouri State with one of my seniors here at our high school that's really into photography. We got him involved on that one. He did an awesome job.
And then our most legendary trip to Chicago to watch not Mr. Watson play. Mr. Watson had a hamstring.
Yeah,
watch Mr. Love play. But you know, you're someone that's been on the sideline, someone that's shot big games, you know, for me and for us in the past, but certainly, you know, as I said, lifelong NDSU fan, you kind of bring the fan's perspective, but you also are an NFL, you know, and football content creator. I mean, you're a podcaster, you've done some writing for us and for me. And, you know, so you bring kind of more of the analytical approach or, you know, you're not just a fan. I mean, I could call 25 people and get them on the pod and get the fan's perspective. What do you think so far of just kind of a high level view? And we'll dive into the UNI matchup. I don't have much to say really about senior day other than that it was impressive. I'll probably have gone through some of this, you know, leading up as we're sort of going to magic of podcasting here. We're going to cut this in. We're going to cut the Nate Zastro bit in. But what have you seen from this squad at 6-3, kind of from a high level perspective?
I think we see NDSU fans are watching a really good football team when we're used to great football teams. And that feels like a huge drop off. And that's just kind of the reality of college sports and kind of the reality of NDSU fans quite literally being the most spoiled football fan base the last decade. So it's kind of that way. You want to say, well, this team isn't as talented as some of the teams that won national championships. Yeah.
Okay.
You're probably right. And that's okay. You know, that is okay. That it's, you know, we got to a point where it was, man, Frisco every year partying after the game. Yeah, that was fun. That was a ton of fun. And I'm not saying they can't get back to that. But you watch this team this year and that's just not really what they are or who they are. They've got some nice players on this team, but they don't have, you know, the three or four guys that you're looking at and saying, you know, you and I, Ross, well, we're going to be writing about them in the Packer Report draft guide because that's what they are. They don't have those kids this year. They either transferred out or they're in the league. And in the past, we've seen this NDSU team not really rebuild, but reload. And I feel like the reload was hindered this year because of the portal. And as someone that listens to this show, I know you guys have done a good job talking about what the portal has done to this team. And
got starters at Kansas State, got would-be starters at Coastal Carolina, got would-be starters at Colorado State. I mean, it's not an excuse. It's just reality. It is a factual statement.
Like, I think I have I live in Kansas City. I've got a lot of fans.
Siegel might be like third team all Big 12.
He might be. And that's exactly where I was getting at is I've got these K-State fans that are literally asking me like, who's next? You know, who do you got for us next? And the answer is no one. There's no Siegel coming through the door this year. And I think that kind of explains it all.
If there was, recruit your own players.
Yes. Get your own. He's ours. And I think some of that is going to be, is going to be just taken care of. And it's going to be something that they have to kind of figure out as they go. But for the Bison, like that's just kind of where we're at with this team. And it's just something we're going to have to get used to. And hopefully the next couple of years, we've got to do that. And then we've got to make sure that they are being able to recruit and kind of develop these guys. And I think the development aspect of it has kind of taken maybe a little bit of a backseat because they don't have the same level of talent. And sorry, I just had to talk to someone as they were coming into my room. there's a lot going on there in that last 30 seconds. So that's just kind of my perspective of this team right now.
No, we're a crack crew. We got, you guys have listened to the show. There's no Trevor Gebhardt here, no Zach Willis here. We're, you know, Jake and Nate are kind of holding down the fort. So we appreciate any time you're able to give us today. Let's dive into Northern Iowa. And I think, you know, there's two matchups that are fascinating for me. And one of them is just one side of the ball versus another. And the other one is Theo Day versus NDSU's secondary. I got to tell you, I was super impressed and am very excited. I was worried about North Dakota State's secondary and to a degree remain worried in big time games. But this young talent is so exciting. Najee Nelson is a player. And you know, no one on the staff probably gives a hoot what I think, but that kid should be playing. I mean, if it was me, he would be playing. True freshman, obviously Raja's younger brother, not his little brother, but his younger brother. And he's long and talented. Him, Jaquez Alexander. We certainly heard stories about Jalen Crumby. Jalen Duffy's another three-star kid. That, like, youth might need to be served. You and I have been talking about Darius Givens all year. And they're going to run up against, I think, the best thrower. If the best thrower in the Valley isn't Cam, it's probably Theo Day. And Theo's not quite on the level that he was last year. But Michigan State transfer and one of my favorite guys. And he's how they get it done. I mean, he really is. They've got decent backs in Ty Edwards and Harrison Bebui, but the player that gets it done day to day is Theo Day, and his number one target, Sam Schnee. I am very, very, very excited to watch the development and the usage of NDSU's secondary as they kind of take on a group that maybe doesn't do the best job run blocking, doesn't produce a ton on the ground. But hey, you can throw it on NDSU's head if, you know, if things don't go the right way. I mean, we've seen Jaden Price give up passes. We've seen Shepherd give up passes. We've seen Sam Young give up passes. This is a secondary that's gettable against a quarterback that's very, very good.
Right. And I think you look at you and I's wins and losses this year, and you can directly make that correlation between how well the DL's throwing the ball.
Yeah.
Because in all their wins, he's taking care of the ball. His touchdown to interception ratio is nice, which you like to see it. And then you look at some of the losses and he's throwing the ball to the other team. Right. And that's what I think ultimately is going to be the deciding factor in this game is the turnover battle. Who can win that battle? And I think that is who's ultimately going to come out on top, because, you know, you talk about NFL draft and you talk about that kind of stuff. And man, Theo was a guy I know coming into this season that at least had NFL teams' attention. I don't know if he does still, because like you already mentioned, he hasn't really had the year that I think a lot of us expected.
He's getting old.
Take off. But he can still sling it, man. He can. It's pretty to watch him throw the ball.
It is. It is for sure. And the other matchup I'm looking for is NDSU's offense versus Northern Iowa's defense. We mentioned, you know, the transitive property of football doesn't always apply. You think about, you know, I think, you know, the University of North Dakota poured their absolute heart, soul, program into beating NDSU at home and then went down to Cedar Rapids and just got killed 27-0. And I don't think NDSU fans need to like think, okay, we got pounded by UND, who then got pounded by UNI. Should we be super scared of UNI? I don't know if that's the case, especially defensively. We talked about they gave up 30 to Iowa State, 34 to Weber State, 41 to Youngstown State, 20 to Indiana State, then 41 again to South Dakota State. And in a loss last week, they gave up 35 to Missouri State. This is maybe not a particularly gifted defense. And as much as folks want to get on the offensive coordinator about, you know, play calling or running Cole Payton to the left or, you know, kind of whatever the case may be, they've beaten up on bad defenses. That has been like a staple. They will put a 50 burger on your head if you're not playing defense that's up to par. And that is sort of some of the stuff that we've seen from Northern Iowa's. Maybe they're not playing defense quite up to par, giving up over 7.5 yards per attempt. And they play decent run defense, but 3.1 per when you're UNI against other teams, that can turn into 5 yards a carry for NDSU real quick. As we just saw last week, Southern Illinois was a great run defense. Didn't matter.
Well, I think these two teams are in some ways kind of a mirror image of each other, because you look at their wins and losses, and they've got both got impressive wins, and then they got some losses that you just kind of scratch your head like, what happened? What happened in that game? Like the Missouri State loss last week for you and I is one of those. Like how did this game get out of hand for them? And is it one of those instances where they're not playing their best football down the stretch? And I think if you want to say one thing for this NDSU team, last week was impressive. Last week was an impressive win for them. And it could just very much be the hangover effect of SDSU, which I hate to say, but you look at them coming up on the schedule. And I mean, there's no two ways about it. SDSU is the best football team in the country right now at the FCS level.
Yep.
And, you know, once you get that in the rearview mirror, it's kind of one of those things where you go, okay, whew. Like, that's behind us. Let's focus on these next two games. Let's get into the playoffs. Let's make a run and, you know, let's see what happens. And I think that could be very much be the mindset that NDSU has right now. But, you know, you tell me, Ross, they win this game, they're likely not playing on Thanksgiving, you know, or that weekend.
Seven or eight seed, I think.
But they lose and, you know, all bets are off, right? Yeah. It's going to be tough to see where they land within the bracket, and they're going to have an uphill climb.
Could be a little bracket piece right to South Dakota State or USD, one of the two. You never know. All right, Mr. Stack, appreciate your time. Can we get a score prediction before we let you go?
Oh, I think NDSU is just they're too well coached to lose this game. And I know that's going to rub some people's feathers the wrong way, but they are a well coached football team. And I think they win this game semi comfortably 34-21.
Yeah, I've got 42-20. I'm right there with you. UNI has shown that they will let teams score. And if you are not a very, very, very good defense, NDSU will dunk on your head. And that is what they just did to Southern Illinois, and it's what they've done to teams all season. All right, Jake, want to thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate you, and we'll talk to you later soon. All righty, we want to thank Mr. Stack for his time. Want to thank you wonderful people for listening. Want to thank our sponsors, Big Deck Barbecue Company and Gateway Chevrolet. And finally, want to thank you guys for listening all regular season long. Have a great weekend, and go Bison!